Hi, everybody. This is John Cooper with KOSU. And in the Tulsa studios today, we have Mr. BJ Barnum with the band American Aquarium. He's a songwriter and lead singer for the band. They're kicking off their new tour here in Tulsa, as well as releasing a new record that was recorded here in town with our old pal John Fulbright. Hey, BJ, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Good, man. Thanks for coming in and spending some time today.
Heck yeah, thanks for having me in.
You bet. Got to ask, why Tulsa for the recording sessions?
Well, we've kind of made a history of going to towns that have a really rich musical history to make records. We did a record down in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. We did a record right outside of Water Valley, Mississippi. We like to go to places that kind of have this history that some people might not remember, especially kids my age, you know. Not a lot of stuff pre-Drive-By Truckers, Alabama Shakes, Isbell. Not a lot of people remembered, you know, the Swampers. Not a lot of people remembered the great stuff that came out of Muscle Shoals in the late 60s and early 70s. And same thing could be said for Tulsa. Tulsa is one of those towns. When it came down to making this record, we were either going to do it in Tulsa, Oklahoma, or Memphis, Tennessee. Two places that obviously have rich musical history. But what made it very easy for us was the fact that one of the guys I wanted to produce the record lived about a mile from here, Mr. John Fulbright. He's been a good friend of mine for years. And is also one of the most talented songwriters I've ever had the chance of knowing. So it seemed like a no-brainer when you get to make music with not just people you respect, but people you actually like hanging out with. That's when it becomes very easy to make a record. We did a record down in Muscle Shoals with Jason Isbell. You know, when it's a fun hang and there's that mutual respect of artist, you can really capture something cool. And so we were here early December for 8 days. And we made a record called Things Change, and it finally comes out on June 1st. I couldn't be more tickled about it.
Man, that's really exciting for you, and I'm sure, and for us as well here in Tulsa that you chose this town to come do the record in.
Yeah, before this, Tulsa was one of those places we got to come into for like a day, you know, eat some food, usually some barbecue, and then get on the road. And so living here for, you know, 8 or 9 days really gave us a chance to kind of immerse ourselves in the city and kind of really appreciate the resurgence and the revitalization of kind of downtown Tulsa. We found a lot of new restaurants that became our favorite, Lone Wolf. I think I ate there every day. At least I got that chicken sandwich at least once a day. There's a little coffee shop right there in the Brady Art District. The place we met each other this morning.
The Chimera.
Chimera. Oh.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Like, literally, the Cortado at that place should have got credit on the record as a primary player. We recorded right across the street at the three-car garage studios. The Hanson brothers were kind enough to turn the reins over. We were originally planning on doing it at the church, but it wasn't open yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of had to go with plan B, and John knew the Hanson brothers, and they were out supporting a Christmas record, and they were kind enough to just turn the keys over and say, you know, cut the lights off when you're done. And we got to make a cool record, and not only make a great record in a great town, but really get to appreciate a great town.
Man, that's very cool. You know, and I want to ask you, what do you think makes a town a music town? There's certain towns where music is drawn to them. Memphis, Tennessee, Seattle, Washington, Athens, Georgia, Austin, Texas. What makes a town a music town?
I have no idea. It's got to be something in the water. Because there are very much, like when you think of these towns, the first thing that you think of, when you think of all these towns, I think of music. I think of different eras, you know, obviously, you know, grunge. For Seattle and with Memphis, all I can think about Stax and Sun. And, you know, when you talk about Detroit, you think about Motown. And, like, there's these towns that, like, I don't know how they became these epicenters, because before Motown, Detroit was just making cars. And then all of a sudden, one little shop opens up and starts recording, and then it changes the world. And then you start viewing Detroit as, yeah, they make cars, but they also make records, like hit records. I don't know what it is. There's a possibility for every town to be a music town. Like, talent just doesn't come from big cities. A lot of the talent that you remember from Memphis didn't come from Memphis. They moved to Memphis. So I think it was really and truly, sometimes music towns are just the nearest, biggest town to wherever that talent's being born. You know, Elvis Presley ain't from Memphis.
Nope.
Johnny Cash ain't from Memphis. But they all got there following the same beacon. And I think Tulsa's really coming back. You know, this kind of the teens, the 2000 teens have been extremely good to Tulsa. You got the Turnpike Troubadours, you got John Moreland, you got John Fulbright, Parker Millsap, J.D. McPherson, all these people kind of coming out at the same time We talked about on the car ride over here, just kind of every corner of the Americana realm, they're covering it. And it's, and they're not just covering it like, you know, half-heartedly. They're like really, really good. Like nationwide, people are taking notice of this. And they, I don't think they're taking notice of Tulsa. I think they're taking notice of, like, it took me a while to be like, wait a minute. All of these people are from the same 15-mile radius. That's saying something. So I think Tulsa is very quietly reclaiming their stake as, you know, we're not going anywhere. We were a music town, and we still are. And I think it's the megaphone is getting a little bit louder for people outside of Tulsa realizing just how cool it is here.
Yeah, well, thanks. And it is true, man. Tulsa has always been a music town, going back to Bob Wills, Leon Russell, J.J. Cale, the whole Tulsa scene.
Speaking of, you also have Kane's Ballroom. That's a nice little ace in the back pocket right there. I try to tell people from Tulsa, I'm like, I don't think you realize how lucky you are. Most towns don't have a music venue beacon that's been around since God knows when, that has literally hosted every major musical act that's came out since the building was built. You know, you got country swing, you've got rock, you've got punk, you've got hip hop, you've got electronic music, you've got country music, Western music, this Americana thing. It's played host to all of that underneath the same four walls. It's pretty amazing in Raleigh, where I'm from, North Carolina. You know, a music venue pops up 2 or 3 years later, it closes down, changes its name, pops up as something else. We can't keep a music venue to save our life. Therefore, we can't build a history at a music venue. But when you walk into Kane's and you look up and you see Hank Snow and you see Hank Williams and you see Jimmy Rogers, you're just like, whoa. I'm standing in the same area that those people stood. Like, if you have to take a moment and collect yourself and realize, like, to a degree, if you're standing on that stage, you've somewhat made it this far. You know, it's a neat feeling.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, man, tell me a little bit about recording and working with Fulbright. What did he bring into the studio that was different from other producers that you've worked with?
Fulbright is a true craftsman. Fulbright is a songwriter. So when you record with a songwriter, sometimes when you record with just a producer, they're usually a musician. They're usually not songwriters. So what they try to add to the song is layers of music and this kind of wall of sound. And what songwriters producing your record does is they take away everything that doesn't need to be there. So that's my favorite thing. We've made a couple records with some of my favorite songwriters, and the biggest thing they bring to the table isn't what they add to the song. It's what they strip away from the song. And Fulbright did just that. Fulbright came in, and if we played the song the way he heard the song being served, he left it alone and said, let's just play it again until we get the right take. But the biggest moment for me on that record, there's a song on the record called One Day at a Time. It's about my sobriety. And it was just a fast, blazing rock and roll song. And Fulbright was like, have you thought about just slowing it down and playing it with acoustic guitar? He's like, the lyrics are too good. The lyrics are getting covered up by the music. And so I was like, yeah, sure, I'll try. And so I walked in the studio. Wes Sharon from Norman engineered the record. I didn't know it, but Wes hit record when I went into the thing. And we caught an acoustic take with me singing it very somber, very slowed down. It's what stuck. It's what you hear on the record. It's that one take that I had no idea what I was doing. It was just, I'm listening to John tell me what to do, and I went and tried it, and it was the moment. It was catching lightning in a bottle. And you can hear on the record, it ends side A. It's track 5. So if you're listening to it on an LP, it ends the side A because you hear me take my headphones off, sit them on a stool, sit the guitar against the stool, walk out the door and shut it behind me. And we left that recording at the end of that song just because it was such an organic take. We wanted the real listener, the guy who's really got the headphones in, listening to it through tubes, to really hear, like, oh wait, I think he might have actually just did that, like, live. And sure enough, that was the moment of the record that I'll completely attribute to John Fulbright.
Okay, you got a new lineup with American Aquarium. How does that affect the way that you write, or does it, and how do you approach live performance with a brand new band?
I started the band in 2006, and since then I've had 34 members. It's been tumultuous, to say the least. I've never really felt secure in a band lineup. Every record I've ever made, this is our 7th studio album, I've never made a record with the same band that was on the previous record. There's always been at least one or two turnovers on each record. But I've never had an entire band, like a mass exodus like this last one. I had my last band. Some of those guys have been with me for 8 or 9 years. Some of them have been with me for a year. They all quit the same day. Kind of left me to question whether or not, is this the time I do the BJ Barham solo thing, or do I keep American Aquarium going? And at the end of the day, I felt like I still had stuff to say. and American Aquarium is my vessel of doing that. Believe it or not, BJ Barm's solo stuff is fictional narrative writing. The thing that I put my name on is made up stories, but the band is like 100% autobiographical, kind of cut to the quick honesty about my life and my observations. And so I put together a new band, and I wanted to make sure I found a band that loved music the way I did when I was 21 and I started a band. And so I found guys like that, and it made me fall back in love with playing live again. And, you know, after 12 years of anything, marriage, that's the same job, sometimes you can lose that fire that made you want to do it in the first place. And I definitely lost that fire. I was in a pretty toxic relationship with my band. I was in a creative wasteland. I hadn't written a song in 2 years. And for somebody who calls himself a songwriter by trade, going 2 years without executing your job once kind of makes you question if you're even a songwriter at all. As soon as I got the new band and they filled that room with positivity and proved to me that these songs were worth continuing to play, I wrote a record in less than 2 months. Songs just, it was like somebody walked over to the water spigot and just turned it back on. And it really revitalized me as a writer because it gave me faith. And it wasn't just the guys backing me that made me a songwriter. Like, I'm a real songwriter. You know, it's like I'm a real boy. But this new band is just, it says a lot about what positivity brings to the table. When you have people that want to be there, you know, again, marriage, work, music, whatever it is, if everybody, every party involved is gung-ho about being there and working toward the same goal and having that kind of commonality, you know, that's when the creative juices are at an all-time high. I feel like that's where we're operating right now. We're operating in a really, really great territory. I've almost got the next record written, and the new record comes out next Friday, and so I'm sitting on a batch of songs that I don't know what to do with yet. So it's first time in my career I've ever been there where I'm almost lapping myself, which is a solid feeling.
Wow, the spigot did come on.
The spigot did come on, and I'm writing about stuff I've never written about before. American Aquarium's always been something based on me writing about my relationships and drinking and the road and my vices. Now I am 34. I'm married. I have a kid. I've been sober for 4 years. I'm writing about a lot of stuff that I've never got to touch, and I'm able to look back on a lot of that old stuff and kind of raise my hand and have an accountability for it in my wise mid-30s old man sage period. And kind of be able to raise my hand and say, you know what, I was the common denominator in a lot of my failures. And instead of blaming it on other people like I did in my 20s, it's time to kind of stand up and show a little bit of accountability. And so there's this vulnerability to a lot of the songs that I don't think most people want to do. Nobody likes looking in the mirror and telling you and realizing you're the one that was wrong in the situation. And so I think that these songs come from a real kind of an open vein that I think comes through in the music. I think people are really going to be able to relate to them just because of how uncensored they are.
Hey, who are your influences? Who influences you as a songwriter, as a musician, bands?
I wear it on my sleeve. The storytellers. I grew up, I love John Prine. I love Guy Clark. I love Townes Van Zandt. I like Bruce Springsteen. I like Paul Simon. I like Bob Dylan. I like Neil Young. I like anybody that sits down and in 2.5 to 4 minutes can tell me a story that makes me feel something, that either wrecks me or inspires me. Springsteen's probably the biggest. Springsteen was the first, when I picked up Born to Run for the first time and put that on, you know, that's 8 songs of perfection. That record for me is these like kind of rolling narratives. You know, it's like you don't need a chorus, just have a really great story and a hook at the end. Like Darkness on the Edge of Town is just 3 verses, and it's, you know, with one really great tag at the end of each verse. But then I started diving deeper and I started realizing I had a lot more people near my age, contemporaries, that are writing great songs. Like Ryan Adams is one of my favorites. Jason Isbell is great. Patterson Hood is fantastic. Josh Ritter, Joe Pug, David Ramirez, John Moreland, John Fulbright. A lot of people that I can look to that are look a lot more my age that are writing some fantastic songs. They inspire me just as much as the greats do because they're proof that songwriting is not just. The 60s didn't have all the great songwriters, and the 70s didn't have all the great songwriters. Every generation's got their share, and it's fun to, even if I'm never considered in the long run part of that share, at least I can tell my kids I knew most of that share, you know. That's the one thing I got going for me for sure.
BJ Barnum, thanks for taking the time today, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.